Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, April the 5th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good, thank you, Graham. Although I hear you might be going back into lockdown, is that correct?
Yeah, things in France are not so good. They have the, it's like the perfect storm of, you know, the English variant running rampant here with COVID, plus a real lack of vaccination as compared to the US or the UK. So, yeah, so the kids are going to be, you know, they're closing the schools. Looks like there's going to be about a month of no fun. So we'll see. I'm hoping that by the end of the month, they will have figured out the vaccine issue and, you know, we'll start seeing more of that so that we can, because that to me is the only way out of this thing is to, you know, obviously socially distance, but you got to vaccinate people.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's been a really long road. I cannot believe that we're more than a year into this stuff. But anyway, I have my health, so I can't complain.
Very good. I have my first vaccination, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I know. So wait, you're getting two, you have another dose coming up or something, right? It's a two dose, yeah.
Yeah, in May. It's all scheduled.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you have the skills needed to succeed in your MBA? Harvard Business School Online's Core Business Essentials program is an MBA prep course that offers immersive, real-world learning, 100% online. Prepare for the classroom with the program Harvard Business School offers to incoming students. Visit hbsonline.co today. So last week was another nutty week with a lot of round two decisions rolling out, as well as one of the most prominent rankings. Do you want to just give a little recap of what we saw last week?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was the last week of what we call decision weeks, where some of the real big hitters were releasing their final decisions. So Harvard and Stanford and Sloan were the three sort of major hitters, and LBS I think was also in amongst the mix. So yeah, lots of activity on Livewire. I'll tell you one thing that really stood out for me, Graham, was a couple of folks that were admitted, for example, I think to HBS, that had actually not been admitted to other M7 programs and maybe had a 680, 690 GMAT or something like that. They were just completely floored that they could get an admission at Harvard and just so grateful and so on and so. I mean, it was just fantastic to read and watch some of the reactions out there. But yeah, a fantastically busy week. And then obviously complemented with the US News ranking, which you know, for the most part, I think is an extremely solid ranking of the top programs in the United States. Although, as we've discussed on several occasions, having Harvard at number five just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, maybe it's because they're admitting all those people with 680s, Alex.
Yeah.
No, I agree. It's a really good ranking. The HBS result is a bit puzzling, but it does, you know, if you look at the top 16 schools, they've got the schools that I think most would agree are the top 16 in the U.S., and in more or less the right order, too. So, but yeah, there's always that fun debate. This year was a little strange just because, you know, Wharton and MIT didn't really participate, so U.S. News had to kind of cobble together some data to keep them in the ranking. But I feel like we're coming out of the, you know, the COVID fog with the rankings, and it seems like, you know, from here on in, schools are participating, and we'll get back to normal rankings. Obviously, we saw the FT and one of the others, I can't remember if it was, I think it was The Economist, where, you know, there just were a whole bunch of schools completely missing, which made for interesting results. But yeah.
But I'm not sure if that improved The Economist ranking or made it worse.
I don't know.
The Economist ranking is pretty crappy anyway, right? Let's be frank about this.
I know. So what? Yeah, we don't mince words on The Economist ranking, even though both of us do like The Economist.
Yes.
It's just that the ranking is very strange. So the other thing, you know, you didn't say it, but we did talk a little bit about the rankings over on Clubhouse. Mm. And for those of you listening who aren't on Clubhouse, it's sort of like a live podcasting audio, you know, drop-in audio app that you can get on the iPhone. And we have a little club that we've set up on Clubhouse called MBA Admissions, and it's for these types of discussions. So we've been trying to get on there once a week. I think we'll be back this Thursday at noon Eastern for another session. And one of the things I love about this is that we actually got to meet a podcast listener, or maybe a couple of them, on the one we did last week. There was a woman who's heading off to Stern and who mentioned she's been listening to the podcast for a couple of years. And it was just really fun to get to interact with folks. So I've enjoyed that. I don't know about you, but it's been a lot of fun.
No, brilliant. And we had another guy on stage. We had a real good conversation in terms of talking about the GMAT specifically and so on and so forth. It's really an engaging sort of medium, I think, that I'm excited to continue to explore. So, yeah, if anybody's sort of on Clubhouse, look, you know, do a search for the club, look for me and Graham. Let's connect. That'd be very good.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that did come up in the Clubhouse discussion this week was, what should you do when you're into business school? And, you know, like, how do you spend the months ahead until you matriculate in the summer? Usually it's, you know, August by the time people start really getting going with their MBAs. And so, you know, and there's a lot of debate, you know, do you go and take time off? Do you start prepping, like, by taking courses or doing pre-MBA internships? And we've organized an event, and I can't take credit for this. This is really all Mike on our team, but we've organized an event that's going to be coming up at the end of the month. I think it's April 28th, and we've got HR folks who are in charge of MBA recruiting at Bain, JP Morgan, and I think a couple of others that are going to join us. So stay tuned for that. That'll be a fun event, and there'll be information on the website. You have to sign up and register and stuff, but that's brewing. We did get an email.
Let me just interrupt quickly. Not only can you not take credit for that event, Graham, but your initial response to the question of our Clubhouse participant actually basically said, don't listen to this event. Just go and enjoy yourself for a few months, because that's the only time you're going to get now to really enjoy yourself before you are in the throes of the MBA, the throes of your career, the throes of everything else. So spend the next 2 or 3 months doing something completely different, completely off the map, and enjoy it.
I know, I did say that.
But then you got corrected. That was very good. You've got to hit that middle ground, Graham.
Yeah, no, and I think actually this is a weird one in that because of COVID, it's not like you can strap on a backpack and go tooling around, you know, Latin America or Southeast Asia, or which is what a lot of MBA admitted students often do or in the past had done. So, but in any event, if you got in and you're listening to this podcast, congratulations. Take a deep breath, enjoy yourself, and, you know, by the end of this month, maybe, you know, tune into this event. You'll at least get to learn a little bit about what these jobs are like what does it mean to be a consultant or an investment banker? We've got some other folks that are going to join as well, too. So you'll get some industry exposure, and it'll be interesting. So the other thing is that we got an email from one of our listeners, and, you know, just everyone who's listening knows you can send us emails at info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject wiretaps. And this person wrote because they just got into a bunch of schools and they wanted us to feature them on the episode. And I said, well, we'll try and squeeze you in. So I'm going to give you kind of put you on the spot, Alex. And, you know, this isn't going to be an official kind of wiretaps thing. But this person emailed to say they'd gotten into Berkeley. You know, they got into NYU, Wharton, and Washington University in St. Louis. And the wrinkle is that Berkeley's giving them $160,000, which is effectively a free ride. Stern gave them zero. Wharton's offering them $50,000, and Washington U in St. Louis is offering them $135,000. I'm pretty sure that this person is also waitlisted at Stanford, and they're trying to figure out, like, what do you do to work the waitlist, and could they ask for more money from Wharton? It sounds like what's effectively happened is Stern and Olin at Washington University have fallen off the list. And so it's coming down to, like, Wharton, which they said is a real close second for them with respect to Stanford, or Berkeley, where they have this massive scholarship. So any thoughts on, like, can they go to Wharton and say, hey, I got 160 at Haas. Can you up that 50 that you're offering right now? And question number two is there anything they should be doing with respect to Stanford?
Well, I don't think they can ask Wharton in the same tone of voice that you're asking, Graham. That might actually backfire on them pretty quickly. Yeah. It's not going to eliminate their offer of admission and the scholarship offer. But if you are going to request a review of your current scholarship offer based off of another offer, I think the tone of voice basically needs to be something like, you know, I really want to come to Wharton. I recognize Wharton is my best choice because of X, Y, and Z. But the offer I have from Haas has really changes the calculus, because clearly this is, you know, from a purely rational standpoint, it's just much, you know, it's currently super compelling. There's a better way to say it than what I've just done, quite frankly. But and you might articulate that better. But basically, sort of, you know, framing it correctly is going to be super important. Making sure, you know, most schools will say we don't negotiate, mm-hmm. But nevertheless, most schools do ultimately negotiate, especially for their very top candidates that they really want. And you're revealing to them a little bit more about your decision making. I think that's perfectly fine. Frame it correctly, and so forth. The question then becomes, if Wharton doesn't increase the offer, is Wharton compelling versus Haas? So really looking at your career goals, I think they have a post-MBA career ambition in venture capital. I don't know if they're coming from venture capital. That would obviously make things a little bit easier. But really understanding over the long run, is that price cost differential worth it or not? Obviously, Wharton is a tier above Haas, but Haas' location in Silicon Valley might be favorable for them. Maybe they're based in that region and they want to go back to that region. I don't know that we know that. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be something to factor in. And then obviously they're on the Stanford wait list. So they want to make sure that Stanford knows that they are absolutely excited to be on the wait list. They really and make a compelling case for Stanford in terms of why they are your number one choice. And I assume they would be with their goals in VC. Stanford over Wharton over Haas, if all things were equal, would be my perspective on that situation, Graham.
And I would say, you know, I really appreciated this person writing to us. And, you know, the thing is that they want to work in venture capital, but they're pretty focused on kind of real estate, private equity, to be specific, and even prop tech, which is, you know, like property technology, like the use of tech in real estate and stuff. So you know, this is a tricky one in that ordinarily, if you're just saying venture capital and real estate, I mean, Wharton is absolutely superb in this domain. Mm. And so they would do well to go to Wharton, assuming they're not going to get in off the wait list at Stanford. But, you know, when it comes to prop tech, Haas is not, you know, I mean, they're in a good location for all things tech. And so, you know, you could make the argument, although I still feel like Wharton's the more compelling choice here. It's tricky, though. There's a lot of money on the table, and we don't know where this person's from, where they want to land in the long term. So there are a lot of factors to consider. I'm not optimistic about the waitlist at Stanford. I hate to rain on anyone's parade, but I feel like in this year of all years, it's going to be challenging. I'll also mention this person doesn't have stellar numbers. Their numbers are fine, but it's not like an over the moon GMAT score where the school might say, oh, let's grab this person off the waitlist. It's going to be a nice boost to our numbers. And so, I just think this year there's not going to be a lot of movement at the top at a place like Stanford or even Harvard. So in any event.
And that's a good point to recognize, Graham. And I'm sure we talked about this before, but Harvard and Stanford will have much more control over their wait lists and the numbers that they need to place on the wait list than schools further down the pecking order. So Harvard and Stanford, they both know their yields on a year-to-year basis. They essentially only lose candidates to each other and then a few candidates to Wharton and the rest of the M7. But basically, it's a trade-off to each other.
Yep.
So they will be able to only put fewer folks on the wait list, but also go into that wait list with less often than maybe a top 16 program. So hopefully that makes sense. But yeah, a really interesting thing. The only other thing, the other thing we don't know about this candidate is what are their personal resources, their risk tolerance and so on and so forth. Obviously someone that's carrying a lot of debt and doesn't have resources, the calculus is very different to someone that actually isn't carrying debt, has lots of resources and has banked their buck, and they can take more of a risk in terms of going to the better opportunity at the higher price, right? So, you know, these sorts of things matter.
Yep, agreed. So thanks for that listener email. Always appreciate those. We're going to move on and get into the wiretap stuff, but I did have one more thing, which is we're in March Madness on the website where we, you know, set up a bracket of 32 post-MBA employers that was based on when people register at clearadmit.com and indicate where they're hoping to work. That's how we picked the 32 most popular. We're now, as we record this podcast, we're down to 4 companies. We've got McKinsey against Google in one side of the bracket and Bain against BCG on the other. And actually, by the time this podcast airs, we'll be down to just the final, the championship, and voting will open today on Monday when this airs. So you'll be able to vote. I don't know who it's going to be. You know, is McKinsey going to beat Google or vice versa? Is Bain going to beat BCG? I have no idea. But those are the 4 that are left as we record. And you can vote by just going to bit.ly/MBA-employers, all lowercase, in order to vote. So check it out. That's been a lot of fun. I'm actually a little surprised that the 3 MBB firms are all still standing. I would have expected like maybe some kind of an upset along the way. And it is true, Apple almost dethroned Bain on its way to the final 4 here. But anyway, kind of fun stuff. We'll see how it turns out as the rest of the week goes by here.
Very good, Graham. Very good.
All right, so let's get a move on and get into our candidates for this week. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 1. So this is an ApplyWire entry. The person's applying to 7 schools, and they're not going to be starting. They're going to be applying this coming fall, so they're still a year plus out. And the schools are Cornell, Dartmouth, MIT, Kellogg, Chicago, Wharton, and Darden. This person's been working in home building and kind of the marketing function for a home building company. They want to maybe get into consulting, but they also are considering investment banking, so they're somewhat undecided. GMAT score 750, GPA 3.67, and they've been working for about 4 years. They're located in Brooklyn, and they'd love to land in New York after business school. They majored in English at a small liberal arts college. And they even give us some clues. They say, think Vassar, Wesleyan, Bowdoin. And they said that, you know, they mostly took a lot of writing-heavy classes, but they did do about 6 math and computer science courses to sort of, they're hoping that that kind of can show their quantitative ability. They have been working in the kind of real estate domain. They've had a couple of promotions. They now manage a team of 3. And they point out that their company is definitely not like an MBA feeder. But they're wondering, like, can they position themselves as being unique because of that? They also run an online publication about podcasts. And they, I guess they mentioned, this is great, Alex. The person says, my obsession with podcasts is how I came across the Clear Admit podcast, which is truly the one show I never miss an episode of. Keep up the great work, Alex and Graham. So anyway, Alex, what do you make of this candidate? That's just really great feedback to have. But what do you make of this candidate?
No, I think that's really cool, actually. No, absolutely brilliant. So what do I make of this candidate? I'd be really curious, Graham, how this candidate, I don't know that we know this candidate's gender, so this candidate, their decision to go into the home building industry with the company that they went with, and so on and so forth, because as they say, this is not a feeder industry to MBA, which is perfectly fine. But it'd be just curious to know how they made that decision and how they've progressed and so on and so forth. It looks like they've progressed very well. But it does bring this sort of point. There are feeder employers, obviously, to top tier business schools. And then there's everyone else. And are you at a disadvantage if you work at anyone else other than the feeders? And I think the answer to that is you're probably going to have to do a little bit more work in your applications to really articulate the impact of the work that you've had, your learning and so on and so forth. Because as an adcom, I already know quite a lot about what an analyst has done at a large consulting firm or at an investment bank or now in from the tech sector and so on and so forth. So I will need a little bit more education from a candidate like this. But I reckon, Graham, that this candidate has done very well. which is very good. Their stats are sort of off the charts. And the fact that they're a liberal arts major is perfectly fine, as you know, Graham, as a liberal arts major yourself that went to Wharton and so forth. So their stats are wonderful. It looks like they've done very well. The only concern that I would have with this candidate is really make sure that your goals and your plan and your sort of vision going forward is well developed. And they acknowledge that they think this might be a weakness in what they've written here, and that they're going to work on that over the next several months. So, and what I could see this candidate doing is, get the MBA, go into consulting for two or 3 years, whatever is more traditional, coming out of the MBA to sort of further round out their experience, and then get back into a leadership role in the home building market, which is what they want to return to, based off of what they've told us. But quite frankly, Graham, despite their judgment in loving our podcast, I think this person is top of the top of the heap and should aim high.
Yeah, I was going to ask this person to give us advice on the podcast, since we don't really have any idea what we're doing.
Yeah.
And it's, we don't even have like a trailer, and apparently we need one of those, and I don't even know how you make one. So anyway, but yeah, I agree with you. When I saw the numbers, and one thing that was strange is this person mentioned they might take the test again, and I would say absolutely not. Like,
yes, no,
750,
oh, please don't.
750 will do it, 367, liberal arts college. Yeah, I went to Swarthmore College, which is very similar to the list of schools that this person mentioned. Admissions officers tend to like liberal arts grads. In fact, I think they get a little bored with all the business undergraduate majors, from like business schools and things, who then want to get an MBA. And so it's almost easier to demonstrate need when you're coming from a liberal arts background, because you can be like, look, I had a great education, I'm smart, but I didn't really study business, and so I need the MBA. Whereas sometimes with the folks who have an undergraduate education in business, there's this fear with the admissions reader who's going to be thinking, well, is this person just like punching their ticket to get the name on the resume, or do they really want and need this education, right? So there's that aspect that plays in favor. I agree, this person's not from a feeder industry. You know, one of the weaknesses that can come up would be in the recommendations. Ideally, the recommenders know their stuff and at least get familiar with what's required of them for a business school recommendation letter. So there might be some work to do there, but I think this person has a lot of going to have a lot of opportunity. And I couldn't help but wonder if they should be throwing in an application to HBS or something. If I don't know how they built this list. I know they don't want to go to school in New York because that's where they live now and expect to end up, and they want to get a couple years out, which I think is a brilliant idea, just to get a break and be in an MBA kind of environment. That's, it sounds like they have a lot of these like real collaborative schools on their list, and so that's terrific. But yeah, I love this candidacy. I think that he or she can probably write their ticket if they do well, executing on the application process. So, I think enough said on that one.
Very good.
All right, so let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry, another early bird candidate who's going to be applying next year to start in the fall of 2022. This person's looking at Duke, Michigan, NYU Stern, Toronto Rotman, and then UCLA Anderson. And this person's been working as a fashion stylist and in sales, and they also do some acting on the side. They want to pivot and get into tech or consumer goods on the back end of the MBA. GMAT score 760, and their undergraduate GPA, which was in Canada and on a 12 scale, was a 9.5 out of 12. For those of you keeping score at home, I tried to do the math on this, and I think that translates to about a 3.2 on the 4.0 scale. But again, it's a Canadian GPA, and there's no grade inflation in Canada, apparently. So this person has an interesting background that I'm going to let you speak to, Alex, since you selected them. But what do you make? I mean, they have 5 years of work experience, kind of a non-traditional. I'd be good if you could sort of explain their path a bit and their background. But I wonder what you make of their odds at some of these schools.
Make of their odds, now you're talking Sandy Kreisberg and Poets and Quants. I'm not sure we give odds.
No, I don't want a number. No, I don't want a number, but what do you think of their chances?
So this is an example. I think our first candidate is yeah, brings some diversity in terms of their career a little bit, right? Because they, you know, home builder marketplace or whatever. But this candidate absolutely brings a sort of different diversity. So basically, it looks to me like they spent a good amount of time, and what is it, 5 years of experience, basically in the retail sector, which is great. As a fashion stylist for a department store or whatever that might be. So they're selecting outfits and how the store is laid out or whatever. So it's sort of a merchandising role or whatever. I mean, I don't think that's called merchandising, but I mean, it's once you sort of read between the lines, it's actually quite an important role for this sort of fashion department store, one would assume. So I think that's going to be quite interesting and sort of really... getting to see how they want to take what they've done, what they've learned, how they've grown, and then sort of apply the MBA in terms of their future going forward. And it looks like they like that sort of marketing role, and whether it's marketing in tech or marketing consumer packaging, it's sort of marketing that's that sort of constant theme from where they are to what they want to do. As a marketer myself, a teacher of marketing, and marketing I'm passionate about, I mean, I can get all that. So I think that's really good. They've done a bit of acting. That's pretty good too. So, you know, all these top MBA programs, they love. I mean, acting is great, right? It helps with your communication skills, your leadership. You can also, you know, the schools will have some kind of play you can participate in or whatever it might be. So you could see how this person will act, will engage with the student body, will add some sort of element to that. So that'd be nice too. They've got a ridiculously high GMAT grade, so they're clearly super smart. I mean, I'm not sure about this GPA. It doesn't sound outstanding, but again, there's probably a lot less grade inflation in Canada, and so on and so forth. They're also son of immigrant parents from Sri Lanka. So maybe there was some, you know, some adjustments that needed to be made along the way to sort of acclimatise and so on and so forth as part of their story. But frankly, Graham, I think if they do a good job with their candidacy and get their applications in order, I mean, that 760 GMAT / they're a fashion stylist / actor just sounds like a wickedly interesting combination. The thing that I'll ask you, Graham, as a first generation immigrant from Sri Lanka, how does that sort of alter the calculus, if it does at all?
I don't think it's going to alter the calculus much. I think, you know, there's a relatively strong kind of history of Sri Lankans immigrating to Canada, as well as Indians. Are you asking me, like, are they going to be lumped in a bucket with kind of Indian applicants or something, or Indian immigrants in the U.S. and Canada? Is that what you were thinking? Or,
I mean, it's possible, right?
Yeah, it's possible. I think I'm not worried, just because this person has such a unique path that I don't think that's going to count against them in any way. The things that jumped out at me, and I think, you know, if you're working at your local Bloomingdale's or Macy's or H&M or something, and then you have bad numbers, like, that's not going to be interesting to the admissions committee, right? I mean, there is this danger of, like, well, what kind of a role do they have? And is it sort of on the level with the types of things typically folks are doing pre-business school? But I think a lot of that, any of those concerns really melt away when you start to see that this person did well in university. They even mentioned, you know, they had A+ in financial accounting. They recently took a micro econ course and got an A+ in that. They're also currently taking stats, you know, GMAT 760. Like, this person clearly, as you said, smart and can tick the boxes. And so then they just get the upside of being like, wow, they're working in fashion. They're an actor. Like, there's a lot of positives, you know. So I think this person's got a great chance of getting into business school. And frankly, you know, the schools on their list, they've got, you know, Fuqua, Ross, Stern, Rotman, and Anderson. Those are all, to me, within grasp. I think, you know, they might even think about, I don't know, adding an M7 school to that list. You never know. And in fact, I did wonder, I'm not an expert on this. I mean, I know NYU has a whole fashion MBA program and there's some stuff in there if they want to eventually get back into that. But I was thinking also if they want to work in kind of marketing or consumer goods, you know, obviously Kellogg is a school that comes to mind. Even HBS has a lot of great ties into some of the big names in kind of the, you know, fashion world or what we would call luxury brands and that kind of stuff. But again, I know they may want to get into tech. They're not really sure, right? But this person, I feel like they have a really interesting story. The recommendations thing, again, may be challenging because they're not going to be asking someone who's probably written 100 of these before. But it's all doable. They just got to put in the time, and I'm glad they have the test behind them. They have a lot of time to prepare their applications. So this should be, you know, really good. And they also mentioned they love the podcast. That must be why you picked them, huh?
It's great. We had two ApplyWire entries this week, I'm guessing, and both of them like the podcast. So it's totally coincidental.
Yeah.
But joking aside, I would say probably good to get several of these applications in round one if they can, if all the ducks are in a row, which presumably they should be because they're thinking about this now. They've already got the GMAT out of the way and so on and so forth. So if there is any chance that they're going to be bucketed in with other sort of overrepresented Asian minorities or whatever it might be, then as long as you get your application in round one, it's not going to have any impact at all. And like you said, Graham, I mean, just other elements of this application are really going to allow this person to stand out anyway. So they're not going to look like someone from an overrepresented bucket. But that said, round one, if you can, mix in one or two M7 programs with the top 16 programs that they've selected, which are very good. Duke, Ross, Stern, all make sense for me, and Anderson and so forth. So, I think, again, it's all going to be down to execution here, Graham, just like the first candidate. And that's typical of candidates that are less traditional. Execution of the apps becomes super, super important.
Agreed. Yeah. So I appreciate that person's feedback and their posting of their profile. Thanks for that. Let's move on and get into our final candidate. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. This is a DecisionWire entry, as we've been doing a lot of late, as people have decisions and this person is undecided. They applied to Berkeley, Duke, Harvard, Stanford, and UCLA. And they ended up with two offers, one from Berkeley with a $50,000 scholarship and one from UCLA Anderson with a $140,000 scholarship. They're starting school this fall. They want to get into tech after business school. They'd love to work at Amazon, Google, Microsoft, or Tesla. And they indicate that they have not made their decision yet. And they recognize that Berkeley has a better ranking and is better known for tech. But on the other side of the coin, UCLA is offering them a really big scholarship. And they're actually more attracted by the living experience in LA. So what do you make of this? There was a lot of debate on the website for this entry and a lot of back and forth. I mean, there were some people squarely in like the UCLA camp versus the Berkeley camp. So what do you make of this and what would you tell this candidate?
Well, I don't know how things have changed since Anderson plummeted out of the top 16 of US News rankings and was overtaken by their nemesis, I guess, Marshall. But I mean, I joke aside, I mean, that should have no bearing on this at all. So this is a straight up issue. Haas is at the very top end of the tier that they're in. And Anderson is at the bottom end of pretty much the same tier, or you could argue that maybe there's a tier difference between the two. But that then is compensated by the differential in the scholarship money, right? So that makes perfect sense to me. This person wants to be in LA, Graham. So if they want to be in LA, then surely Anderson, like I would just look at that and say, you know what? You're going to have a great experience at Anderson. You're going to be in LA. You're going to have access to tech at Anderson to do what you want to do. If you want to be in LA, then go to Anderson and keep some money in your pocket. But I don't know what your perspective would be, Graham.
It's funny because I when I first saw this, I was like, gee, you know, that's still a nice scholarship from Berkeley. Mm. And if they are going to go work at Amazon or Google, paying off their loans is not going to be a big issue. And so you know, I initially was like, well, Berkeley's the school here. I mean, they're better suited for placements in tech. They're in the Bay Area where, you know, a lot of these companies have, you know, like, so Google is headquartered there. I don't know where Tesla is, but I assume they're somewhere right around there. And obviously Amazon, Microsoft are a little further north.
And I don't know if Tesla's there, or I think Elon Musk threw all his toys out of the pram and moved out of California <That's right>. completely.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But in any event, my initial instinct was, gee, you know, $50,000 scholarship at Haas, like, go, you know. And Haas, you know, you talk about tiers. I mean, I would argue that Haas is like, I mean, they're knocking on the door of the M7. They are constantly in all these rankings now. They're you know, solidly top 10, usually right at number, you know, 8. And, you know, some would argue they're kind of threatening some of the back end of the top 7 to move into that group, right? I mean, some people would say, oh, you know, Haas is really giving Columbia and Kellogg a run for their money or something, right? So I don't know. I mean, this is a tough call. I do get that the person wants to live in LA. I'm like biased here because I can't imagine wanting to live in LA, but that's just my.
I couldn't either.
I've been there a bunch, and I do like it. I have a lot of friends there and stuff. But I just personally wouldn't necessarily want to live there. But I get it. The weather's fantastic, all that stuff. So, yeah, this is a tough one. I can't fault this person. And as you correctly point out, I think that the scholarship amount differential justifies the decision to go wherever you know whichever one you choose. Like, I feel like it makes sense that UCLA is giving them a lot more money, and it's probably enough money to put the schools neck and neck. And so I think what I'm hearing from you is that Ty goes to the city you really want to be in, yeah, which is LA. So I understand it.
I mean, this is a classic case. Basically, yes, I will concede Haas is in a tier above Anderson. Therefore, Anderson gives more money than Haas. That is your standard calculus, yeah, that many, many candidates will face. You know, as they make that final decision, you go to the better tier, which may present better opportunities, may surround you with a better, slightly better student body, which I think is sometimes often overlooked. Mm-hmm. So the better tier versus keeping more money in your pocket. It's one or the other.
Yeah. Anyway, good debate for people to think about. Hopefully this candidate, they're not going to go wrong. So whatever they choose will be the right choice for them. So great work picking these out as usual. I did want to say, you know, we have like 87 or we are closing in on 90 ratings on Apple for, you know, people rating the podcast. I'd love for us to get to 100. I think our first candidate today who knows a lot about podcasts would probably tell us that getting reviews and ratings is really important. So if you can rate this podcast, I know there are hundreds of you that listen every week, so there's got to be a way for us to get to 100 reviews or ratings. So please do that and tell a friend about the podcast. And Alex, if you're willing, we'll come back in a week's time and do it all over again.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Graham. Stay safe, everyone, and best of luck.